tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. The most important place on the face of this earth for the future of mankind is the Middle East. The potential of global catastrophe could be ignited by present conditions underway right now in the Middle East grows ominously greater every single day and every single week. In the current number of the Plain Truth is an article assessing that problem, wondering whether or not in the Middle East in 1976 we will see resumption of full-scale hostility. Not that there has ever been an absence of warfare, because in a sense the war there has never stopped. Guerrilla raids, airstrikes, bombings, terrorist attacks are daily reminders of the unsettled Arab-Israeli dispute. Now, with the arguments flaring up in the United Nations and Security Council, as well as General Assembly debates, and visiting, of course, representatives of the Palestinian Liberation Organization. With the sensational announcements of bombs being found, apparently the work of the Jewish Defense League, or at least some of those who, though not official members, may have allied themselves with some of the tenets of the organization, the threat of additional disequilibrium in the Middle East is time once again to appraise where are we now in the light of vital prophecy, and where do we go from here? Years and years ago, right in the very deepest part of the involvement of the United States in Vietnam, I was warning that eventually your newspapers are going to be highlighting developments in Central Europe and in the Middle East which will pale into insignificance American concern over Vietnam. That time is now arriving. Years and years ago, this program, The World Tomorrow, warned that eventually Germany would arise out of the rubble and the ashes of defeat to become a post-war World War II miracle of resurgence, revitalization, industrialization, and powerful economic base, and eventually to become a full military and political power in Europe. We have talked for so many years about the emergence of the United States of Europe, a third power bloc in the world, and continually told our listeners, our viewers on television, and our readers of The Plain Truth and other publications that European intervention in the Middle East is going to be the spark which ignites a nuclear bomb World War III. Because, you see, people no longer talk of whether or not such a World War III is going to occur. Most people wonder when. I have asked European leaders in the past, including people high in the ministry, such as the Defense Ministry, the Economic Ministry of West Germany, about eventual European involvement in the Middle East to be the guarantor of territorial integrity for the Israelis, or to keep various hostile elements in the Middle East apart, to bring somehow some solution to this steeping, seething cauldron of disequilibrium on the world scene, and right at the very heart and core of the majority of the energy sources of the Western world, the fuel that it takes to run the economy, the industry of the industrialized Western European powers, and to an increasing extent, as we grow, not diminish, in dependency upon Middle Eastern oil, even that of the United States. It could not be a more important part of the world. The last time we talked, I was mentioning how the potential for massive global catastrophes grows every single day. The nuclear arms race not really abated, only changing in character. Giant dislocation of the world's wealth. Food versus population curve. And announced the current number of The Plain Truth with an article on that in the Human Survival section that you ought to write for. It's the single most important crisis facing humankind. Especially then, instability in government. The toppling of governments around the world, the disappearance of the old guard diplomats of the post-World War II era, and the emergence of despotism, rightism, of extremism in governments, especially in the Afro-Asian bloc. And then the continued drive by the Soviet Union for world domination, especially highlighted by recent incursions in Africa, principally Angola. The potential around the world for massive disease, the susceptibility even in developed countries of the same thing. And this is nothing more than an appraisal of the 24th chapter of the book of Matthew in biblical prophecy that talked of a time of impending natural calamities, drought, disease, various disasters, wars, rumors of wars, and a time which is spelled out in the Bible as the beginning of a great tribulation. Other prophecies in the Bible, principally in the book of Daniel, Ezekiel, Revelation, and elsewhere, highlight the Middle East and talk of what is eventually going to happen right in the very important place with respect to the dislocation of the world's wealth, with respect to future energy supplies, which is the Middle East. In the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel is a strange prophecy of how a king of the north, of a northern power, and written during the time when subsequently in history, as most biblical commentaries would show you, they felt this was fulfilled by a series of struggles over a period of generations with many different kings of what were called the Seleucids or the Seleucidae of Syria waging war against a series of kings or pharaohs in the area of Egypt who were called the Ptolemies or the Ptolemaic period. Those wars, often as not, involved the area of Palestine and Jerusalem because they raged back and forth across that land. Various alliances, agreements, puppet states, military parlays and treaties, attacks, ravaging the country back and forth, and this went on for a whole period of history. This has led many people in assessing the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel in biblical history as well as profane history to assume that that would have been at least the forerunner or the typical fulfillment of the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel, which says in verse 40, at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, that is this king of the north, revealed in the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel with unmistakable overtones, pointing out as a type of that king of the north, Adolf Hitler. It even mentions an unmistakable biblical reference to what was Kaiser Wilhelm I of the Hohenzollerns in Germany, who is found typically in history in the person of a man named Heliodorus, who was a raiser of taxes. It was said of him, just as it did occur of the Kaiser who abdicated and went into seclusion virtually, that to stand up in the estate of a preceding ruler would be a raiser of taxes or an exactor in the glory of the kingdom, but he would be destroyed, according to verse 20 of the 11th chapter of Daniel. Neither in anger nor in battle in whose estate shall stand up a vile person to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries. That vile person coming in peaceably and obtaining the kingdom by flatteries and promises is found in the person of Antiochus Epiphanes in ancient history, who was a vile, brutal despot who gloried in policies of virtual genocide during his time. Interestingly enough, in the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel, once that personality is introduced, the personality never changes. That individual, that vile person who stands up as the military leader over a great power called the King of the North, never alters in Bible prophecy. In the 11th chapter and verse 40, it highlights the time of the end. Now, biblically, you can say people have always thought they were living in the time of the end. You can go back into generations ago, and all the wars in history, the 100 Years' Wars, the Revolutionary War of the United States, people preaching, teaching, expounding from the Bible always thought they were living in the time of the end. And isn't it strange that they were? No, you miss what I mean, I think. That for them, they were living in the time of the end. For them, because I'm not copying up by saying, because the biblically defined time of the end is that period of time when the intervention of Almighty God begins in human affairs, but it is preceded by, literally, the intervention of a great fallen archangel who is called Satan the Devil, a time that is called the Great Tribulation, characterized by drought in diverse places, global political and military upheavals, wars and rumors of wars, and even by religious martyrdom, persecution. This statement in verse 40 of Daniel 11, at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, is a statement described the time the Bible calls them of the end. First, Jesus said, except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. So one definition is a time when human annihilation would become a distinct possibility. We live in that time. The Kaiser didn't. Even Hitler did not. Not even with the advent of the atomic bomb and the explosion to Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the totality of the American nuclear arsenal at that time. Did we yet live in the time of the potential of the extermination of the human race? But now we do. Because we have developed bombs of which the thermonuclear explosions of Nagasaki and Hiroshima were only the match that it takes to ignite. The fusion process of a hydrogen bomb it takes the fission-type bomb of the dirty bombs of Hiroshima to virtually act as a match, so to speak, to ignite the nuclear power of a huge multi-megaton hydrogen bomb. And now we have so many thousands of those weapons stored in many areas around the world between the superpowers, carried every moment of every day and every night in the silos of the missiles aboard nuclear-powered submarines prowling the seas of the Earth. They repose in their missile silos sprinkled across the United States and Canada and across many of the provinces of the Soviet Union and other countries. They're in some of the arsenals in various strategic areas of the United States Air Force bases over in Spain, Turkey. Most of them, about 90% of our nuclear capacity in Europe, is stored inside of West Germany. And we now have the capacity for overkill of all of humanity many, many times. Some want to get academic and argue whether it's 50 times or 20 times, when once would be quite enough. We live in a time, then, when the potential for human extermination becomes an increasing possibility, I'm tempted to say, and yet I think more and more people would even say probability. We don't want to agree that that is possible. We want to think that it's impossible, that something would happen to stop it, that something would come along to prevent the extermination of humankind, and that we would be correct, because that's precisely what Jesus went on to say. He said, except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, and went on to say that for the elect's sake, for the fact that there is an elect on this earth, those days shall be shortened. Not by political maneuvering, not by governments of this earth, or the military of this earth, not by an armistice or a ceasefire, but by direct intervention of the eternal God. So this prophecy of the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel zeroes in on the Middle East. It talks about a king of the north being jostled or shoved by a king of the south. That finds another latter-day typical fulfillment in the invasion of Ethiopia by the armies of Mussolini back just after the turn of the 20th century. But it says, the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots, horsemen, with many ships, and shall enter into the countries and overflow and pass over. He shall enter also into the glorious land, absolutely meaning Jerusalem and what was called Palestine, the nation of Israel today. And many countries shall be overthrown. Then it says, Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon shall escape, and that is found in some of the nations that settle on their knees, according to biblical prophecy, and have never migrated from that area. He shall also stretch forth his hand upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. And he shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver. The precious things of Egypt and the Libyans and Ethiopians shall be in his steps. Then it says, tidings out of the north and east, and north and east from there is the Soviet Union and China, shall trouble him, this king of the north. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and to utterly make away many. That fits with the prophecy in the early chapters of the book of Isaiah. It talks about the Medes and the Persians. It talks about a Babylonish power that will be active in the Middle East. Prophecies that talk about the breaking of the yoke of this power in my land, as God says, meaning Palestine, the Middle East. We have been saying for years you're going to see the emergence of a superpower inside Europe. Maybe it won't be called the United States of Europe. Maybe it'll be called Les États-Unis de l'Europe or something like that. I don't know how they would say it in French or German or something else. But the move gradually continues. I read just yesterday the full report. I perused it. I didn't read every line of it, but it's a full notebook-sized report that I received from our own overseas bureau in Brussels, the report that resulted from months or perhaps a couple of years of constant travel, study, and research by the Belgian Prime Minister whom I interviewed at the NATO summit conference last spring. And his job was to present the deterioration of the present steps and moves toward the formulation of the European Economic Community by presenting to the European Parliament and the various individual European governments his formulation of the steps which must be taken toward more permanence in the existing social and economic unions and organizations of Europe and a move toward full political unity in Europe. They're moving toward, for example, a common passport, toward a common currency, toward establishing in every aspect of society the complete idea of a federal state a super state which, when it does combine together, will actually be more powerful than the United States of America. Now, the interests of Europe are those of a group of countries knowing a lifestyle, a standard of living, unlike that in the history of the entirety of these separate national states, and they don't want to leave it. They say that they are political dwarfs and yet economic giants, industrial giants, and they are tired of speaking with such a whisper when it comes to the global maneuverings and jostlings between the two superpowers of the United States and the Soviet Union, looking back and forth like the spectators at a tennis match as they see the pros and cons of the do's and don'ts, the charges and countercharges, the name-calling and blame-placing, the responsibility laid at the door of one or the other of the two superpowers for intervention in the personal affairs of other countries, witness right now the very great stress placed upon détente by the struggle in Angola. Europe is tired of all that. It's tired of our Koreas and our Vietnams and our embargoes. It's tired of the oil-rich Middle Eastern states slapping an embargo even on European nations as a result of them allowing the United States Air Force to transship war materials to the Israelis, and therefore the Europeans have to suffer. Well, now we see growing solidarity in the common market. Britain brewing up trouble for the European Economic Community, an interesting article also in the current number of The Plain Truth. The article in the current number, including growing solidarity in the common market, written from Brussels by the man whose voice is about to hear, and the article on campaigning begins for 1976 German elections, and also the article on the Middle East in 1976, are we going to see more of the same? Every one of those articles exactly applicable to the prophecies of which I speak. Well, now, another new thing beginning to happen is that of attempted negotiations with Middle Eastern states on the part of the European Economic Community. They will open negotiations with one major Middle Eastern state after another, including Lebanon, when Lebanon gets itself in a condition to do so. I take you now to Brussels and the voice of Ray Kosanke, who reports of these new developments in the European Economic Community from on the spot.
The European Community has just concluded extensive negotiations with the Maghreb countries of Morocco and Tunisia. The Maghreb has for years sent almost 50% of its exports to Europe. With these negotiations concluded, the European Community will now turn its attention to the Mashrek countries of Egypt, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. Negotiations will open with the four nations surrounding Israel later this month. With Egypt on January 28th, with Jordan on February 2nd, with Syria on February 4th. Community officials state that negotiations with Lebanon will only start when that country is in condition to begin talks. Now impossible, of course, due to the civil war raging in its streets. The negotiations are part of the European Community's overall Mediterranean policy, which seeks to stabilize commercial relations to the benefit of all Mediterranean countries. Egypt, for example, will be seeking an accord similar to those signed with Morocco and Tunisia. The main benefits to Egypt will be, first, free entry for all industrial products into the European market, which represents 242 million people. Secondly, an accord will mean more financial help in the form of loans and grants for an Egyptian industrial base, since Egypt does not want to depend on the U.S. alone for financing, management, and technology. And thirdly, Egypt hopes, once European investment projects begin in poorer areas of Egypt, that capital from oil-rich Arab neighbors will begin to flow into Egypt in support. The significance of these negotiations is found in the European Community's effort to maintain a balance in dealing with the Arabs on one hand and Israel on the other. Last spring, Israel signed a trade agreement with the European Community similar to the one now to be offered to the Mashrek countries. The real importance of these agreements is to see whether they too become embroiled in a bitter dispute over Palestine and especially Jerusalem. As great as its efforts to remain neutral may be, all signs point to Europe's becoming more closely embroiled in the Middle East situation. Ray Kosanke at European Community Headquarters in Brussels.
Speculate for a moment, if you would, about what would occur in the event of a new Arab oil embargo. Instantly, the proverbial sword of Damocles, this time in the shape of an Arab scimitar, would descend upon the juggler of the vital industrial base of the industrialized, economically powerful West European countries. They would have to do something about it, whether it takes the form of blackmail and heightened prices, or whether it takes the form of revision of various independent European states' policies toward the nation of Israel. Whatever concessions the Arabs want, Europe is beginning this bargaining session right now, obviously in the aftermath of the beginning days of the energy crisis from the Yom Kippur War in 1973, when Europe felt the impact of the cutoff of Arab oil and entered a deep, dark time of the energy crisis, which saw fantastic inflation from which it is not now recovering, and the soaring inflation continues, as well as business recession and problems in industry. It has been said by observers on the Rhine River for the last 20 years that at any time the German people see some type of unsettling situation developing which would threaten their newfound prosperity, the entire German political system, which after all exists on subventions from the principals in the Ruhr and the multimillionaires for the various political parties, completely different from the United States system, even though it is called a democracy. Yet the method of the financing of these parties is completely different from that of ours. The multimillionaires of the Ruhr, the top 14 of whom out of the top 15 are former card-carrying Nazis. It was said by Brian Connell, who wrote the book Watcher Along the Rhine, a former Reuters correspondent for about 20 years and who was a personal friend of the Alte's son, Konrad Adenauer, who was the leading post-World War II figure at the helm of government in West Germany that took a decently trying period of time when the real boom was experienced. He said any threatening of newfound German prosperity would see the diversion of those subventions from the major industrialists into very much less savory quarters than we have so far seen. Many people think because the neo-Nazi party, a small upstart party which at least for a time gained sensationalism in the news and a significant number of the votes that at least saw them capture a few seats in the Bundestag, then finally they were defeated and seemed to dwindle down to almost nothing, and so therefore people think it's all over. Well, they haven't studied the German political scene to see how everyone tries to outright everyone else when it comes right down to some of the infighting in campaigning and in elections. You need to read the article in the current number of the Plain Truth about upcoming campaigning for the 1976 German elections, because not only is the United States facing an election year, but so is West Germany. You need to understand what could happen. You need to look at the entire overview of what's happening in Europe and the Middle East in the light of Bible prophecy. The prophecies of the Bible indicate two major important things in Jesus' own words in Matthew 24 and Luke 21. One of which is armies surrounding Jerusalem. That's the key. He says, you will know the time of the end is near, basically paraphrased, when you see armies surrounding Jerusalem. In a broader sense, then, armies already surround Jerusalem because the Arabs outnumber the Israelis by a very large number. And those Arab states completely surround Jerusalem today. In a narrower sense, the specific meaning of that is going to be fulfilled when some foreign power from somewhere actually occupies the nation of Israel. Is that what Bible prophecy seems to imply? Jesus talked about the days of vengeance. He talked about armies surrounding Jerusalem so the people should not even return to their home. He's talking about that city, not Iowa or South Africa or Australia or Canada. But he's talking about not coming down to take anything out of their home. He's talking about not returning from the field. You've heard of that, probably, that prophecy there in the book of Matthew. There's a warning about a threatened imminent takeover of that nation. But also there's another interesting statement that has to do with the spiritual or religious aspect of the prophecy of Matthew 24. It talks about a great religious leader becoming more and more involved personally in the Middle East, possibly even being there on the site and making great pronouncements about being not only an emissary of God, but possibly even a pronouncement that he has the very powers of God and is in fact masquerading as God. If that was a prophecy, just compare, if you will, 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter, with some of the statements of Jesus in Matthew 24. He puts together quite a frightening picture. Then if you look at world news today, as a step-by-step gradual move toward full political union and the creation of a third military power armed with the most sophisticated of nuclear weapons, and this gradually growing in Europe, As you see, all that is happening in the Middle East, and now the disequilibrium in new rounds of fighting in country after country, principally one of the most stable in the post-World War II era, that of Lebanon, now torn apart by violent civil strife. And as you see, the potential for war in 1976 in the Middle East is time, as never before, to zero in on Bible prophecy and to watch world news and to wonder how close are we now to the beginning of what the Bible calls a great tribulation. This current number of the Plain Truth, with those articles I've mentioned and many others that have to do with the food curves versus population, with some of the great problems confronting all of humankind and what Bible prophecy says about it, are available right away. Let me tell you about some of the articles in this current number of the Plain Truth. It's yours free of charge, no price. The first one from my father on education for life. The article on growing solidarity in the common market. The article on campaigns against the 1976 German elections and on the Vatican's new activism, especially statements from the Pope concerning Palestine, Jerusalem, the Middle East. The World Watch column by the head of our news bureau, Mr. Gene Hogberg, kind of a provocative title having to do primarily with all of this soul-searching over the activities of the FBI and especially the CIA. It's quite an interesting and provocative article entitled, Is America Going Mad? That, by the way, was a question asked by an editorial in a leading British newspaper. There's the article on bumper crops, buck weather current, Zionism and Mr. Cole by Norman Cousins. Art Bootfrog's column is in this issue, the human survival section on how will we feed the world 6 billion. Other articles of very great interest in the current number of the Plain Truth, yours by return mail, free of charge. While you're at it, request a new booklet just off the press on the pale horse, that of disease epidemics. Mention the new booklet right off the press on disease epidemics worldwide, another fulfillment of Matthew 24 in Bible prophecy. All you need to do is to address your letter to Garner Ted Armstrong, Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. That's Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Remember, there's absolutely no request for money. It is free. It's gratis to you. The address again is Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, brought to you by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your request along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales.